Where do I come from?
SGV!
This was the main fucking tadpole catching spot.
What stories do I have to tell?
Some of this shit is stuff I found out like 2 days ago. It's stuff I wish I had known for a long time.
And why do I get to tell them?
You know, I don't think that just because I have a happy life here that everyone does.
Come down to the little garden with me. Come go with me.
I'm Chris Greenspan, host of SGV Weekly, which is pretty much a love letter to the San Gabriel Valley. This is season 2, episode 2. And it's pretty much all about me, which is why we're starting with some of my earliest memories here.
This is probably the first place I ever saw a game of baseball being played. Did not interest me.
I began publishing SGV Weekly in fall 2020 after a long background in radio, beginning at Mount SAC. I interviewed skaters, food writers, poets, punks, activists, and teachers.
I noticed that our history of this place was missing from a larger history.
Because these particular experiences and these images, they're not hitting in other cultures.
So it's kind of my fire of love story. You know, I'm still helping my brother even after he's been long gone.
I see it as identity journalism, a term I made up right now, combining human interest and oral history. I try to figure out who we are and why do we feel such a strong sense of belonging here, or why don't we? And I'm doing all this from the standpoint of a halfie, a white-skinned, non-practicing Jewish Mexican brought up with a strong do-it-yourself work ethic and more than a little Catholic guilt. I was raised in La Puente, blocks from the industry train yards. This was the sound I fell asleep to every night. But my days were spent at school in Covina, hating life. I was always that awkward guy sitting in the corner at TJ's Subs.
I'm gonna pee pee after he gets me the sandwich.
Okay.
Mike is hot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Want me to make it cold?
No, leave it hot.
Now listen to me eat while I try to answer this question.
I'm not gonna ask you if the SGV has a culture. I'm just gonna say, give us a sense of the SGV's culture through your lens.
Well, I'll give it to you through the TJ's lens right now, since we're here. We've got a kind of a low-key, not terribly excited or exciting, humble, laid-back, and I want to say mostly proud culture. I think most people who live here are proud of where they come from.
Normally, I'm the one asking that question, but this time the tables are turned. And I found out being interviewed is really hard. So I recorded 6.5 hours in the hope that I could edit something coherent together.
Is it your hope to, like, through teaching others about SGV, like, helping them understand SGV will also help them understand you?
Fuck. I don't think there's any way I can say no to that. So in this episode, you're going to find out who I actually am and why you should listen to my intensely produced podcast devoted to the San Gabriel Valley. And it's because after living here my whole life, 31 years, I know what my place in the valley is. And that helps me help others tell their stories. It all begins with a town worth falling in love with.
My favorite city in the SGV is La Puente, hands down.
Why is that?
Because I've always felt like La Puente is sort of like the cradle of the valley. If you think about it in a historic context, this is where the Workman Temple family and a big portion of the Pico estate were. All the development that came here after the Mexican-American War sort of sprung from this epicenter. And La Puente is sort of like incongruously designed. We have these streets that don't form a standard grid. You can't go anywhere in a straight direction, but in a way that's given it a lot of character and a lot of unique geography. Because we're between two hills, it's a miniature valley. It's a valley within the valley. It's technically the La Puente Valley, this whole area, which includes, you know, San Jose Hills, Valinda, La Puente, and Old Town Puente, West Puente Valley, Bassett, Avocado Heights. This is all the La Puente Valley. So it has, I want to say, maybe the most picturesque surroundings of the whole SGV.
I've been all over Southern California, especially when I was reporting for KPCC's off-ramp. The best was getting to do stories on our area.
We're in the crypt of ex-governor Pio Pico at the Homestead Museum in City of Industry.
The Homestead is really close to where I grew up. In fact, when I asked my friend Richard Garcia, who engineers at KCRW, to drive around the 626 with me and record for this episode, we started two blocks from there, on the Valley Boulevard Bridge, over Old Valley, going toward my favorite street, Stimson Avenue.
This is the city boundary right here. We're about to cross over into City of Industry, which originally, if City of Industry didn't have some sketchy maneuvering when it was incorporated, La Puente would probably be about two or three times as big as it is, and it would definitely include this stretch of Valley Boulevard and the railroad tracks that we're going over, because that was extremely valuable real estate. But alas, we are in City of Industry, and we're going over the railroad tracks. This is one of my favorite places in the world. And it only lasts a few seconds, but you can see some beautiful railroad scenery going over it. So here we are at Stimson, now known as Steinmetz Park, but I think to a lot of people it will always be Stimson Park. I don't know, I didn't ask them.
When did the change happen?
Oh shit, that was like 20 plus years ago.
Here's what it looked like back then.
This place had the sickest fucking playground. Not anymore. Now it has like that weird like German postmodern shit that they all have. But it used to have castles, like concrete castles and, you know, like chains and shit that you would climb. Stuff that would burn the fuck out of your hands in the summer.
I've never asked you, but do you want to have kids?
You know, if I did, I would want them to grow up here.
You think bringing them here, bringing your kids here is something that's like a nice warm feeling to you?
Oh, extremely. I mean, granted, having kids might mean having to move to some other place. But if I could raise kids here, that would be probably the most satisfying experience that you could have in your entire life.
Stimson was the playground of my youth. Riding my bike to the library, stopping at the park for water. As I got older, though, I was looking for something else. And I was constantly going to punk shows all over SoCal. I was so consumed by new music that I didn't wait for those bands to record. I just bought a cheap mic and did it myself from the audience. The band I recorded more than any other was Great Ghosts. When I met their guitarist, Alex Aguilar from Bassett, he was like a long-lost twin who wrote songs about the SGV. And he inspired me to write about the Valley too. Here we are, as we usually are, at Crazy Rock and Sushi on Hacienda.
When was the first time you realized you were interested in local history? Or when was the top five times you realized you were interested in local history?
The thing that I think really, really tipped it over, and this is adjacent, this is Whittier, so technically not SGV, but when I was interning for KPCC's off-ramp, I was assigned a story once about some retro arcade that opened up down the street.
My name is Maxwell Montoya, and this is probably one of the funnest games I've ever played.
The name of the place was Neon Retro Arcade, and I went and I covered it, and the people were great. It was fun. But I remember being really pissed off that there wasn't, like, a lot of neon in there. And it got me thinking, like, fuck this shit. What about the Rose Hills sign? Like, that's some neon. And so I ended up pitching some kind of story about the history of the Rose Hills sign, which had a sort of an uncertain origin because it was built in the 1940s, from what I remember, 1944. But you look at the old pictures of it, and it was wooden. And the one right now is clearly metal and not shaped quite the same. And so I was digging around trying to figure out, well, what happened to that original sign? I think I went to some county office and was pretending I was working on like a college project because I thought, I don't know why I felt like I had to lie, but I went down there and I was like looking at these old records of like
electrical installations and stuff in that area in the 40s and having a really hard time finding anything about the company who installed the original sign, though they were able to, I think they were the ones, or maybe Rose Hills gave me this record, that in the 90s there was a company that installed the current metal sign called the Quill Brothers, who were like out in like Upland or San Bernardino or something. And I called them up, and it was kind of great because when I recorded this phone tape, the guy who I was talking to sounded almost ghostly.
The existing letters were old wood letters. I think you know what happens to wood when it goes out in the weather for too long. Between the warping and the splitting, they were flexing too much, breaking the neon on them.
And so this gave me something interesting for my story, and we were going to go up to the sign anyway, me and a representative of Rose Hills, like their media person, a neon expert, a guy from the Museum of Neon Art, which I think is in Glendale, and my friend Joe, who lived down the street in Pico Rivera, and he had a friend who was actually buried right under the Rose Hills sign. I'm not sure how he lucked into that spot, because those are expensive plots, but he, I think, had died in a shooting or something, his friend. And so we went up there, and I did, like, the big reveal. This isn't the original sign. And they were like, oh, shit, you know. And I think that was when I realized I wanted to do stories not really about L.A., but more about stuff out our way.
A couple of my friends who are now interned here, we've spent days of our youth here at and by the sign. And it does bring back memories of them, especially as one of my friends is buried within 100 feet of the sign. It has a place in my heart. I can honestly say that. Makes me feel really good inside every time I see it.
From the Rose Hills Neon Sign in Whittier, I'm Chris Greenspan for Off Ramp.
That was 2015. Scroll down to 2020, and I was feeling the pull of the SGV. In those 5 years, the news for so-called Angelinos hadn't gotten beyond covering anything about this place besides Chinese food and car chases, and fittingly, no one had bought the website sgvweekly.com. So I figured it's now or never.
Do you think that your interest in where you grew up, because of where it is a kind of more realistic mystery to explore, or a realistic undiscovered place to look into, and that's why you're so fascinated with it?
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, the history, the generalized storyline of this area really hasn't been sensationalized at all, which is probably a good thing because it allows the people who are actually here, who are taking up the effort to tell these stories, some ability to tell them for what they are instead of making it palatable in a showbiz way, which I feel like I have to do some amount of that just to hold people's attention. But I'm thankful that, like, I'm able to tell stories about this place that they don't have to have a corpse, you know. But if they do, of course I want to know about it.
Well, the San Gabriel Valley does have a dark history, with the murderous taking of Tongva lands by the Mission, the Californios, and the so-called Pioneers. And I have to credit South El Monte Arts Posse for teaching me that. Their book East of East laid the foundation for what I'm trying to do, especially because they lifted up the stories of Latinos and Asians here. So I had their co-director, Romeo Guzman, who's a public history professor, interview me in downtown Pomona. And what he did was ask me what I ask pretty much all of my guests, to document the nuances of the valley.
When did you know you were from a place called La Puente?
Well, the first time I can remember somebody outside of my family mentioning it, I think I was in kindergarten. And back then, at least, teachers had, like, teacher's assistants. She was really nice. I think her name was Mrs. Truman or something. I remember her saying to me, "Oh, you're from La Puente." And I knew even then, as a little 5 or 6 year old white boy, it's like, that's not how you say it. My mom never made me learn Spanish, but she's where I get my conscious Mexican identity from. She's from Jalisco, and she moved to El Sereno in the 80s to nanny for Westsiders like Kenny Rogers and Burt Bacharach. My dad is like my subconscious, giving me all my Jewish neurosis. He's from Linwood, but his grandparents were from Eastern Europe.
My parents bought a house in the San Gabriel Valley so he wouldn't have to drive towards the sun to get to work, just like his father did. My siblings and I didn't go to school in LP, basically, because my mom got pissed at the district.
What was it like growing up as like this white kid who was not completely white in a place that's very, very Mexican, right?
I think probably until I was like a teenager or something, I probably wasn't very proud of my Latino heritage. I think that's like normal for the children of a lot of immigrants, like until they're like become a young adult, they're sort of embarrassed of where they come from. But let me put it this way, I wasn't very popular. And the funny fucking thing is now the vast majority of the people I talk to, whose phone numbers are in my phone, people I hang out with are Latinos, the vast majority of them Mexican. You can tell at this point that I'm hyper aware and obsessed with who I am. I've suffered from a lot of self-doubt, but I don't pretend to be someone else. And I actually think that makes me good at this job.
Folks need to listen to you because you're from here, you're doing the work, you're aware of sort of the ways in which you fit within this larger scheme of things.
But at the same time, yeah, I do have those questions to myself, like where it's like, am I really the person you want to hear from here? Or do you want to hear from somebody who only talks to street vendors? Or do you want to hear from somebody who's much more focused on where our city politics are actually going and, you know, keeping an eye on development before it happens? So, yeah, I mean, I definitely have some level of imposter syndrome about, am I the person to do this? But I'm the person to do this because I'm doing it, and that's it.
I mean, that's a very punkitos, right? Like, I don't know how to play my instrument, but I'm going to play it really well until I get really well at it.
Pretty much, dude. All right, that's enough pie in the sky talk. Something real sketchy needs to happen to me outside on the street, and it's gonna right after this break.
Support for SGV Weekly comes from
Dr. Rubin's Pomade. Made in Alhambra with a secret recipe since World War II that nourishes your hair with natural ingredients. It comes in flavors like melon, chocolate, and cherry, but please don't eat it. Try their lip balm instead. It lasts for hours. Get yours at drrubenspomade.com and use promo code SGVWeekly at checkout for 15% off. That's drrubenspomade.com.
South El Monte Arts Posse.
Isn't it time El Monte got a new city logo? I mean, how many covered wagons do you see driving down Valley Boulevard? Well, South El Monte Arts Posse is working on that. They want to know what you want to see on a new Monte seal. Radical Histories, the Tongva, the Water Tower. Take the survey on their Insta at SEM Arts Posse. And graphic artist Daniel Gonzalez will make a new logo only for the people of Monte who identify with the city's radical past. The unveiling will be at the LA Central Library's Something in Common exhibit on May 7th. That survey is at SEM Arts Posse on Instagram.
And John Raby, the world's tallest man. Now back to the show.
And we're back under a bridge and things are about to get sketchy.
All right. Pomona Amtrak station. I don't know if we can actually... Nope, bridge is closed, so we'll just stand by it.
Okay.
Good call. That fool's giving me weird vibes, dude.
No, yeah. When he started coming across the tracks, I was like...
Yeah, I was like, literally right after he looks at the microphone.
Good call.
So yeah, I'm not street smart at all, but I've learned what my place in the valley is as sort of a lone observer. And I think knowing that'll make SGV Weekly better in the long run. So to help with the really critical questions about how I approach that, here's comedian and fellow podcaster Dominic Angel from Baldwin Park.
What do you think your obligation is to SGV?
Ooh, my obligation to SGV. It's my responsibility when I'm telling somebody else's story to draw a minimal amount of my own conclusions and present them warts and all without being judgmental about it. And it's also my responsibility to gather as many stories as I can about the area, which includes, you know, gathering stories about things I don't like or things I don't understand. and some of those might not come out as good as others, for all I know. I'll be very frank. You know, like I said, I know mostly Latinos, so I'm not trying to force diversity into my coverage just to look good. I want to get Asian American people on the show from a variety of backgrounds, but I'm not forcing it because I think then it's not going to be as good, to be honest. So I do think I have a responsibility to find people who are out there in the SGV doing interesting things or not so interesting things and get them on. But it's not my responsibility to do it perfect, and it's not my responsibility to please you. The big whoop I made back in season 1, episode 1, is that stories from the San Gabriel Valley aren't too dull to be recorded. They're actually relatable. So I made it my job to find these down-to-earth stories and tell them as they are, which is actually way harder than it sounds.
If you can share, like, what has been the most frustrating thing about, like, producing the podcast or, like, any stories?
The most frustrating thing about doing it is living up to the promise that I set out to do, which is doing stories that are not always sexy and figuring out how to keep being satisfied by what I'm doing with them. Because my instinct from years of public radio production, which is basically in a big media market, it's not as folksy as it is in other places. There is a high expectation that this thing is going to be super interesting, and there's going to be all kinds of aspects for us to pick apart. And so that's drilled into me. I don't know if I can unlearn it. And again, I'm grateful for the experience. But it does mean that when I start putting together a script, I worry about, is this going to be interesting enough? What kind of arc am I going to put in this to make people listen from start to finish? And maybe that's a reasonable concern because we're all so used to being catered to with extremely well-produced stories that are easy to listen to or watch. And so that is the frustrating point at which I start from. That is the tension that keeps me grinding my teeth away while I'm writing these scripts, is wondering whether this story that I am making for a podcast that I told myself has a different threshold for what's important, for what's worth talking about, that I'm still stuck in this way of thinking that I have to hook people. That's the really, really frustrating part. That's all self-imposed, obviously. But it doesn't mean I wasn't growing the whole time as a writer and a person. I took what I knew and what I thought I knew and found a way to be more honest. I was just growing downward at the roots.
You know, you're mixed. You grew up in kind of this like middle ground of not really belonging anywhere, like LA or IE or whatever. And a lot of your content, a lot of your episodes, the stories you feature have so much to do about identity. And so what has this experience of doing this podcast like taught you about like identity, and what is that? What do you feel like it's taught you about yourself?
I've gotten to a place where I'm okay being something else, both and neither. But I guess maybe one thing I've found through doing this is maybe I do feel more connected to that part of my culture. And I think I've become more forgiving. I think a lot of us in the last few years, we've become very knee-jerk, judgmental, worried about whether we're good enough. And so we project onto other people that any little thing they've said, thought, or done wrong is worth bringing up and arguing about. And I think through meeting a variety of people, letting me into their life for an hour or two, I think I see the humanity more. And so the more I get to know the valley, the more digging I feel like I have to do. Sorry for all the earthy metaphors. My mom's a gardener. But in a way, even though I have all these thoughts about the SGV, sometimes I feel like I can only express them by asking someone else's opinion. That's why I saved this question from my wife, Roxanne, for last.
What about the San Gabriel Valley, aside from the fact that it's on your ID card? feels like home for you? Like, I know why it feels like home for me, but what defines home for you, and why is it that this place is it?
It's a really difficult question.
Really?
Yeah. What about it feels like home to you?
It's where my family's from. It's where all my big life events occurred. It's mom and pop shops that have been here like for generations that, you know, our parents ate at, or, you know, that we liked when we were in high school. There's just like a general sense of like familiarity. And I feel like that goes a long way. And while some might argue that certain things aren't always safe, I mean, I remember being in my early 20s and even as a teenager and being able to walk the streets of like neighboring cities, and you just don't feel afraid because this is where you grew up. This is a place that feels like home, you know? And I've never felt that anywhere else. That's why I want to stay here.
There's no way I can say it better than that. She captures all of the feelings that drove me to do this, but I can add to it. Pomona is the first place I got my heart broken, but it's also the first place I took my wife out to eat. Covina was where I was bored out of my mind in high school, but it was also where my friends and I would walk around all night until the sun came up. And La Puente is where I feel the most at home and accepted, even after my estranged youth. This is the place I returned to, coming home from jobs and shows in LA night after night, only to realize one day I didn't want to leave anymore. This is where I found myself, not in some prestigious or cool job or night spot, but in my own backyard, listening to the train whistle a few blocks away. Reminding myself again that someday I need to go record that up close. Thanks to my friends and interviewers this week, Richard, Alex, Romeo, Dominic, and Roxanne. Special thanks to my radio mentors over the years, John Raby, Fred Missman, Paul Gomez, Nick Roman, and Tammy Trujillo. Our theme song is Carry Home by The Gun Club, courtesy of Manifesto Records. Ambient music by Kevin Greenspan. Our logo was designed by Felipe Flores and Rita Greenspan. I'm Chris Greenspan. This is SGV Weekly.
So is this your order? Can you come here?
Nah. I do like the roast beef here a lot. But I'll eat anything here. I haven't had the tuna yet, which is a kind of a surprise.
I love tuna.
Yeah, I love tuna too.
It's a gamble. It's a gamble some places, but...
It's probably good here. Everything's good here. You know, because it's simple and it's fresh. So,
chips.
Yes. It's kind of a place, it's a reassuring place for me to come to.
Comfort.
Yeah, this is definitely my comfort food right here.